The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Visiting Ireland's islands, especially those in a Gaeltacht area, is a great way to imagine how our recent ancestors lived. My next guest was born in Cork City, but spent a lot of time on Oileán Chlaire, or Clare Island, where his grandparents and extended family lived. Well, now he's compiled an eclectic record of items, places and events into a beautiful book that paints a vivid picture of island life over time. Historian Dermot O'Driscoll, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Fáilte roimh.
It's a
Lár Gá Hángach.
Yeah.
It's a bilingual book, so everything that you write is found in both languages, so it can be enjoyed in many different ways.
Exactly, and I wanted to do that because the island, okay, officially it's a Gaeltacht island, but English is spoken there as well, and I felt to be true to, the way things are on the island, I'd do it in Irish and in English as well.
Tell me about your own connections.
Well, my father was born on the island back in 1912, but I've been going there since childhood, since the 1960s, essentially. And I had two uncles, bachelor uncles, who lived there with my grandmother, who had been born in 1884. And my earliest memories going there in the 60s, and even into the early 70s, it was a massive contrast with, say, the life we were living in Cork City. We might have imagined ourselves as sort of young urban sophisticates, which we weren't really. But when we went to the island, gosh, it was so different. You know, you didn't have running water, you didn't have electricity, there were no cars. All the farm work was done by hand. It was old style living. And that was it was great to have experienced it, but it was a real contrast to what we were used to.
Now, your two old uncles were living with your grandmother.
Correct.
Your grandmother, did you get to know her at all? I mean, as a young fella, you don't necessarily know how... how much they know.
Exactly. You know, she was this very old woman. She had been widowed in 1919 and she wore black for the rest of her life. Black shawl, black cardigan, long black frock or dress to her ankles. I did get to know her, but I mean, I'd love to meet her now because she grew up at a time when she would have known people who had lived through and survived the famine, which is incredible to think. I was just kind of one step away from that.
Sure.
But didn't realise it at the time.
I'm wondering, given that Clare Island would be a fishing community as well as an agricultural community back in the day. Did they suffer from the famine or were they able to feed themselves pretty effectively?
They did suffer during the famine. Possibly not as badly as elsewhere, but they did. The problem was the fishing industry wasn't that developed at the time. It was small boats. It was day fishing. And a lot of people sold their gear, pawned their gear just to keep going, to pay rent, to buy basic food. And while one could live on fish for a while, it would be my understanding that one needs, you know, carbohydrates and other foods as well. So the famine did hit the island and they did suffer. Their population dropped by about 22% between 1841 and 1851.
Now, the book is absolutely beautifully produced. There are pictures, historical pictures of the island, but also pictures of artifacts which are extant. And you've brought in a number of things to show me.
Yeah.
You've got a Gansey there.
I do. Perfect for radio. I've got a Gansey here, which was knitted in 1920. And it was knitted with 5-ply wool, which is a very thin wool, and would have been knitted on multiple needles and knitted as one unit, not separate back, front sleeves and all stitched together afterwards, knitted as one unit. Beautifully decorated on the front.
So basically constructed, it's a cylinder.
Yes, essentially a cylinder and worked up. And then there are these beautiful diamond-shaped gussets in the armpit so that when it was being worn by the fisherman, he could raise his arm without
because the number of times as a child when you were wearing a school jumper and you'd have a hole underneath it,
exactly,
from
getting it snagged. But these were knitted very tightly; they were worn tight to the body, and it's a style of Gansey that developed on the east coast of England, the fishing villages, and Scotland, spread to Ireland in the 1880s. But as far as I know, this is the oldest one extant, and it's in absolute perfect condition. It was knitted for my uncle back in 1920 when he started fishing, and when he went to America in 1924, he brought it with him, and on his last trip home to his mother in 1973, he brought it back again, having kept it and left it in the house.
It looks like it's in pristine condition.
There are a few repairs here and there, but it is in Incredible. Now,
what's interesting about this, people might think of an Aran jumper, they think of it's maybe off-white.
Yeah.
This is actually deep blue.
A deep navy, and that was the colour these were knitted in for some reason. The Aran jumpers, which is a different style altogether, much thicker, much heavier, much looser, they were generally the Bonine wool, which was sort of off-white. But this is the classic, I suppose, Cape Clear fisherman's Guernsey. There's none older still surviving in the country as far as I know.
Now, as I said, it's eclectic, and I'm going to page 106 and the drawer.
The drawer, yeah. Well, yeah, well, every house has a drawer where things are shoved and left for future use. But on an island, having a drawer like that was especially important because, you know, you didn't have shops, you didn't have access to everything. So you kept things because they would come in useful on another day. So whether that was a twine that was wrapping a parcel, whether it was a screwdriver, a broken knife, a scissors, even in the list, in the drawer there, it's from our family house on the island.
I'll just start right. This is the drawer, yeah. And it contains 7 screwdrivers of assorted types, a broken screwdriver, a pair of scissors, pliers, 4 lengths of ball twine, a whetstone, 4 wire clips, a cold chisel, a set of Allen keys, 2 loose Allen keys, small coil of wire, and all a small vice grip, a large vice grip, a ring bolt, small spring, and it goes on.
It goes on like that. Yeah, I just dumped the drawer out on the table and listed everything and photographed it. And I suppose you can see a lot of it is to do with small home repairs, yeah. plumbing things, carpentry issues, bits like that. But yeah, you never threw anything away. And I can remember my uncle saying, you know, "Kamadé shin beshe ashoch, keep that; it'll be useful someday."
I still do that, I'm afraid.
I think we all do.
Now, there's a picture of a style. Now, why is that so typical?
Well, the island up until the introduction of cars and mechanised transport, which was essentially in the 60s, all transport, if you like, was by on foot, walking. And while there are roads on the island, there were shortcuts across fields, through different farms and so on.
And of course, you also want to restrict animals from
That's it. And the stiles are designed to keep an animal out or in, but allowing pedestrians. And they're beautifully built in many cases, lots of different styles of style, if you like. And they gave access to these pathways. Those pathways aren't used anymore because most transport is now by car. So the pathways are being forgotten, they're getting overgrown, and the styles are being reclaimed by nature. But I think they're works of art, and they're an echo of an earlier time.
Now, talk to me about the ditch. Now, I think of the ditch as a hollow,
yeah,
something that you might find water flowing through on the border of a field. The ditch in this case is rather different.
It is. While that would be the standard, I suppose, definition of a ditch, in West Cork and in Cape Clear especially, a ditch is the dry stone wall, as some people would call it. So all of the fields, there are about 1,600 fields, gardens, enclosures on the island, and every single one of them is surrounded by a dry stone wall or ditch. And huge variety in the style of building, depending on the purpose of the ditch for a start, but also on the skill of the builder, on the stone that was available, the material. And what I love about, you don't really see them in summer because of the growth and all that, they're hidden. But in winter, you've got this incredible pattern. Sometimes they're in herringbone patterns, sometimes in another pattern again, always beautifully built. And
but you make the point, these represent millions of man hours.
Has to be millions of man hours when you see them. And if you think every stone would have been lifted up, brought to its position, adjusted, possibly discarded, then repositioned, adjusted, moved again. And this would have gone on for years and years. Men, women, and I presume children as well, contributing to the work.
Now, you know, it gets cold in Cape Clear in the winter, that's for sure. How did they warm themselves? I mean, I presume there are some pictures of trees in the book, but I'm not sure how forested it was.
No, Cape isn't really forested. It's very exposed, and you didn't have turf on the island either. So many fuels were called into use. Rack was one fuel. That's the term that would have been used on the island for timber and so on that was washed from the decks of cargo ships or from shipwrecks. That would be gathered and used for building and for fuel. But also furze bushes were used as fuel. And the green furze bushes were burnt, say, in late summer and then allowed to kind of quail away a bit. And then the dried stumps of the furze bushes were gathered and used as fuel.
Now, what about the livelihood on the island? I mean, what was the population, by the way, either pre-famine or post-famine? And when did it start to decline?
Yeah, well, coming up to the famine, the 1841 census records, I think, around 1,100 people. Now, it's only 3 square miles. That was a lot of people. Today,
so it was a busy place.
It was a busy place. Today, it's about 110. So it's only 1/10 of what it was.
And where did they live? I mean, were there villages or were the houses just scattered across the landscape?
Coming up to the famine, there was a change in the 1830s. Prior to that, they were in clusters, smaller houses in clusters. But by the 1830s, the land was redivided, so you had a more scattered type of settlement. Houses generally along the north-facing side of the island sheltered from the worst excesses of the sea and the elements. And people lived, it was subsistence farming, supplemented by fishing. That was it. And immigration, of course, was a huge thing then. Population began to decline during the famine, and that decline got quicker then in the 1920s because the fishing industry more or less collapsed at that time, and you had a huge surge in immigration from the island.
And were there schools on the island before all of that?
Yeah, there was a primary school, national school on the island, which is still there today. Back in the day, there was a boys and girls section in the school and like up to 100 in each side of the school. But it's down to, you know, just a handful of pupils today. So it's like a lot of things in islands and in island life, it's clinging on by its fingernails at the moment.
So the business today is effectively tourism.
Tourism, essentially. There's some farming still. It's mainly dry cattle being reared for beef. The old intensive farming, that's gone when people kind of just subsisted on what they grew themselves. But tourism is the mainstay today.
We played a clip at the beginning from an old documentary. The voice was that of the late Bill O'Hurley talking about how there used to be 100 boats bringing cattle, which had been fattened on the island for sale on the mainland. And that declined, he said. In that documentary, there are less than 10 boats now.
Yeah, well.
Even that vision of the animals on board the boat making their way.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think it's very, very pleasant for the animals being loaded on the boats in those days.
Little did they know what lay ahead.
Exactly. Yeah, little does any animal know what lies ahead being reared for beef. But nowadays, it's much more civilized. They go in a horse box and they're brought. So it's less distressing for the animals nowadays.
Now, what's connectivity like on the island? Winter and summer.
Yeah, well, there's an excellent ferry service which runs 364 days a year, not on Christmas Day. In the off season, you have 2 return trips a day on most days. But in summer, like at the moment, there are 4 return trips per day between Baltimore and the island, and also a ferry a couple of days a week from Skull as well. So good connectivity.
Any air travel?
No air travel. Only in emergencies when the helicopter is called into
health emergency or whatever.
Health emergencies, which happen occasionally as well.
And what are people predicting for the future of Cape Clear? I mean, with only 100 people living there and few enough children, and children generally have an ambition to see the world, what future?
It's
for
difficult.
The
I can remember as a young fella, like let's say 50 years ago, my uncles on the island saying, "Oh, Cape is finished. Cape is what they call it on the island. You don't say Cape Clear. Cape is finished. Oh, it's gone. You know, it'll be." Now that's 50 years ago. People still say things like that today. But I think it's too big to fail, but it's too small to kind of become something huge and amazing. So I think it'll survive. There's great broadband available now. There's a G-Tech hub where you can work remotely. So we've got a lot of modern amenities now which can make life easier and give potential for new types of work, I suppose.
Well, you've celebrated the island very effectively and beautifully.
Thank you.
This book. It's fabulous. It's called Bluary Ilonda, Island Pieces, and it's all about Cape Clear. It's written and compiled by Dermot O'Driscoll. Who's the publisher, by the way?
Well, OD Books, which is my own publishing house. I did it myself.
It's
to
beautiful.
Sort of keep
Absolutely.
Control. Yeah,
the quality is
And it's available in a lot of independent bookshops in Cork, but it's also available online at capeclearbook.ie, which also lists the bookshops where it's available.
Dermot, Gura Míle Maith Agat.
Fáilte róid, Gura Míle Maith Agat Leis.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.